Hi, everyone, and welcome to session two of Online Interdisciplinary Symposium presented by Doctors for COVID Ethics and hosted by UK Column. I'm your moderator, Taylor Hudak. You've heard from leading medical experts around the world explaining the science of COVID-19 through a medical perspective. And many of the measures taken to prevent the spread of COVID-19 had a profound economic impact. During this session of the conference, you will hear from leading experts in the fields of economics and finance to explain the economic dimension of the developing and ongoing response to COVID-19. Our first speaker to discuss the pandemic as a monetary event is John Titus. John Titus has written, produced, and directed videos about the loss of the rule of law in the United States since 2014. His focus on videos largely reveals Wall Street crime and cronyism in the financial system. He has a Juris Doctor and has litigated patents for 25 years. He also holds bachelor's and master's degrees in electrical engineering and worked as an electrical engineer in the space industry. Since 2020, John has co-produced and co-hosted Money and Markets with Catherine Austin Fitz at Solari Inc. John, I want to welcome you to the stream.
Thank you for having me. And I'm just going to launch right into it because it's 20 minutes. And what has happened during the pandemic is most certainly a monetary event, but you need to have a crash course in certain aspects of the monetary system that are not accessible and are not known by even intelligent lay people or even in a lot of cases by bankers themselves. But what happened? I'm going to give you a preview of the evidence and then I'm going to get into the evidence itself. But what has happened is that in March of 2020, the Federal Reserve, which is the U.S. central bank, began a course of action that radically broke from a century-old monetary pattern. And the Fed's new course of action at that time was to use its power to create wholesale or public money so as to directly affect the retail or private money supply. Don't worry if you don't understand that right now. I'm going to give you a crash course, as I said, and walk you through it so you can understand and see what is happening during the pandemic at the behest and at the instigation of the Fed, all very deliberate things. But once the pandemic started and once the Fed began adding more and more money, wholesale money to its balance sheet, the Fed added $3 trillion in wholesale money. It basically doubled its balance sheet within the space of a few weeks. And that in turn caused the mirrored image creation of $3 trillion in retail money. And retail money is money that you and I and people watching this symposium use. But as it turns out, the Fed's new course of action that it began back in March of 2020 was pursuant to a plan devised by BlackRock and presented to the Fed and to indeed all central banks around the world in August of 2019. And so this was basically a foreordained response to a crisis. And we'll look at the BlackRock plan and you can see that. But BlackRock advised the Fed to implement its unprecedented plan. And unprecedented is BlackRock's word when the next economic downturn hit. In fact, that's the title of BlackRock's paper, is the next economic downturn. And as fate would have it, that downturn actually began in September of 2019 in New York in what's called the repo market. And it got a lot worse during the pandemic, but it most certainly started in September of 2019. And BlackRock presented this plan at a meeting in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, hosted by the Federal Reserve and attended by all the central banks around the world and all the monetary and financial bigwigs around the world. And BlackRock presented this plan, and it called its plan for creating central bank money and somehow getting the central bank money or public money into private hands. BlackRock called this plan going direct. Now, since the Fed implemented the BlackRock's going direct plan starting in March 2020, it has left a monetary record behind. And when you examine this monetary record, you could see very clearly that the Fed was definitely and without question following BlackRock's going direct plan to the letter. And by way of that background, I now want to go to a clip from a guy named Augustin Karstens. Augustin Karstens is the general manager of the Bank for International Settlements. And he is going to talk basically about central bank digital currencies in a short clip here. It's less than a minute long. And central bank digital currencies is where we are headed. that's sort of the third step. The second step is what I'm largely going to talk about today, but I want you to know where we are heading with all of this and what all of this means. So I'm going to cut to the chase and show you where we end up. And keep in mind, this is from the head of the Bank for International Settlements. The BIS is the central bank of central banks. So all central banks around the world are part of the BIS, the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, so on and so forth. Here is Carstens. Listen to what he says about central bank digital currencies, because this is where we're going.
Now, in all our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who is using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that.
Well, there you heard it right from the horse's mouth. Absolute control over the monetary system by central banks. So they're going to be, ultimately, they're trying to control every dollar that you spend and decide whether the purchase you want to make with your electronic money, because they don't like cash, is going to go through or it's not. And that's where we're going. Now, to understand where we are and to understand where we've been, you need to understand something about the monetary system. And it's not well known, as I said. And this is the split circuit monetary system. The split circuit monetary system is in place throughout the world, basically everywhere in the world, except with precious few exceptions. Everybody, every country, every major jurisdiction has a split circuit monetary system. And so to be clear about this, circuit implies electronics, because as you just heard, the central bankers do not like cash. So we are excluding cash from this discussion, and we are focused on electronic bank money or electronic money in general. But that money exists in a split circuit. What do I mean by that? A split circuit, it actually means just what I said. It's two circuits. It's really split in half. One circuit is the private circuit, and one circuit is the public circuit. That's the other circuit. Those are two circuits. The private circuit is the retail circuit, and the public circuit is the wholesale circuit. Private and public, as we are going to see, refers to who is issuing money in the respective circuits. And so let's start with the private circuit, because that's the circuit we use, the retail monetary circuit. Who is in the circuit? As I said, the issuer of money in the private circuit is commercial banks. Commercial banks create money and lend it into existence. So they create money out of thin air when they make loans, and then that money gets circulated among a circuit of central bank money, of commercial bank money users, who ultimately, you know, the lenders, the borrowers pay the money back. Now, for a long time, for basically a century, economists actually argued about whether commercial banks could create money out of thin air. And that debate about whether they could do that was definitively resolved in 2014 in a brilliant paper. And I don't use that term, I use it very sparingly, a brilliant paper by one of the participants here today, Professor Richard Verner, in a 2014 paper called "Can Banks Individually Create Money Out of Nothing?" in which Werner undoubtedly and beyond a shadow of a doubt proves that commercial banks create money out of nothing. I was so impressed by this paper when I discovered it in 2018 that I made a video about it for my YouTube channel. I called it "Money, Mommy, Where Does Money Come From?" You are looking right now at a screenshot of that video, and you can see that video on my YouTube channel, Best Evidence. I dumbed that paper down quite a bit, to the consternation of the paper's author, as it turned out, based on subsequent emails. But you can review the paper or look at the video and see that commercial banks create money out of thin air. That's beyond dispute now, thanks to Professor Verner. So who is using the commercial bank money circuit? In basic terms, the users of the commercial bank monetary circuit, the retail monetary circuit, are non-bank entities and people like you and me to finish off the circuit with a cheesy gloss there. But that's basically who uses the commercial bank, the retail money circuit. So if you have an account at Bank of America, which I don't, or HSBC or Barclays, that's all commercial bank money. That money is created out of thin air by those banks. And I've the team color for the private money circuit, the commercial bank money circuit here, is green. That's the private circuit. And I chose that color because money in the U.S. at least is green. Now let's look at the public circuit. And this refers to, of course, the fact that the issuer of money in the public circuit, at least in the official version of the story, is a public entity known as the Federal Reserve. The Board of Governors is certainly a public entity. The issuer of money in the Fed is the regional circuits. They're not public, but that's neither here nor there. It's public money. The power to create money in the U.S. is sourced in the Constitution. It is a public right. It's a public good. But the Federal Reserve issues its own money. And the money is in dollars, just like the retail money in the U.S. But the users of the Federal Reserve money, the wholesale money circuit, are different. They include other central banks like the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan and the Bank of England and Royal Bank of Australia and so on and so forth. That is one class of users. Another class of users of Federal Reserve, the public money, includes the U.S. government, including, most importantly, the U.S. Treasury. And the third and final class of users of the wholesale monetary circuit are commercial banks. They're shown here in green, but this time they have a rectangle around them because they are not the issuer of money, like the Federal Reserve with a circle around it. They are a user of money. All of these entities in the public money bank circuit, in the wholesale monetary circuit, transact in public money, in the wholesale money. And so that's the public circuit. And when we look at these two circuits, the private circuit and the public circuit, they are both in dollars. Everything is denominated in the dollars. But the money is referred to differently. In the private circuit, I'm going to talk about bank money since it issues from banks. And in the public circuit, I'm going to talk about reserves because that is what the Federal Reserve creates out of nothing. It is reserves. But you cannot spend reserves. I can't spend reserves. We do not have accounts at the Fed. We can only transact in bank money. And so let's look at, let's start with bank money and get a feel for how much money we are talking about. I have a graph here I'm going to fill in a minute of bank money in the U.S. since 2003, so it covers almost 20 years. It's in trillions of dollars. It maxes out at $20 trillion. But if you look at the history of bank money in the U.S., you can see up until the time of the pandemic that it is a very linear process. It increases linearly as banks lend more and more money and create more and more money. The money goes up. So it starts at $5 trillion in 2003, tops out at about $13 trillion in 2013, and then the pandemic hits, and then things change. But we'll get to that in a minute. But that's bank money. I'm also going to talk about, let's take a look at reserves in our system. Reserves are also in trillions of dollars. So the scale of money here is the same, but there isn't as many reserves in the system as there is bank money. So let's just look at reserves in the graph of it. And you can see that it increases. It basically starts at zero and remains at zero until the middle of the financial crisis. By the way, the gray bars, there are two gray bars in this chart. The big gray bar is the global financial crisis of 2008. It lasted for something like 18 months. The skinny gray bar, the Fed tells us, is the recession that was occasioned by the pandemic. Supposedly, it only lasted 2 months. So there you have it. That's the official version. But you can see, looking at the graph of reserves in blue there, the reserves increased massively from basically zero. It wasn't zero. It was $30 to $40 billion. It was $0.03 to $0.04 trillion. It increased massively during the global financial crisis of 2008 because what the Fed was doing was creating trillions of dollars of reserves at that time. And it was using those new reserves to buy assets from commercial banks in the public, in the wholesale monetary circuit. And you can see when we, despite the fact that the Fed started to create and then kept creating more and more reserves beginning 2008, that blue line really has no effect on the green line. That despite the creation of all these trillions of dollars in reserves, it doesn't really affect the green line at all. It doesn't affect the retail money supply at all. And you can see that when I moved the blue line up, even in the middle of the global financial crisis, when the Fed puts the pedal to the metal and starts creating trillions of dollars of reserves, it really has little to no impact on the retail monetary circuit. And I'm going to move it up again so that the lines basically come together at the beginning of the pandemic. But you can see from the green line that that's essentially a linear relationship. It doesn't deviate from the line, the retail money supply. You know, our money supply does never deviated from the line. And that's really the key takeaway here, because once the pandemic starts and once the Fed gets going to town here, that relationship, which goes on for 100 years, the retail money supply being impervious to changes in reserves, changes overnight. And so let's look at what happens when the pandemic starts and the Fed starts packing trillions more onto its balance sheet. So let's complete the graph of reserves. And there you can see the Fed really ramps up reserves. It adds $3 to $4 trillion of reserves. It's really $3 trillion through the gray bar, through the pandemic. That's one hump. And then there's a longer extension there. It's about another $1 trillion. So the Fed's balance sheet is now sitting, it's sitting at over $8 trillion, but $2 trillion of that is cash. So it's sitting at about $6 trillion right now. Now, if the old relationship between reserve money on the one hand and the green central and the green commercial bank money on the other hand were to have obtained, that green line would just keep on trucking it, and the line would just go to the very end, but it doesn't. What happens is suddenly the retail money supply begins tracking the central bank money supply. And that is a radical departure from what had happened basically the prior 100 years. I want to zoom into this. And I'm going to have to get my head out of the way so you can see it. There you go. But that is what's going on. And you can see that when the pandemic hits, for every dollar of reserves that the Fed adds to its balance sheet, the retail bank money supply goes up by a dollar as well. And that's what's new. That was a radical departure, as I say, from what had happened previously. And that was not an accident. As it turns out, that was pursuant to a plan issued by BlackRock in Jackson Hole, as I mentioned. And the plan by BlackRock is called Dealing with the Next Downturn. So they're expressly contemplating another economic downturn. And they're contemplating it in August of 2019, when this paper came out and when BlackRock presented this paper to the Fed. So the premise of this paper is there's going to be another downturn. And BlackRock is offering the Fed and offering central banks advice on how to deal with the next downturn. And so what's BlackRock's advice? Well, let's go down to the next page. Take a look at the first bullet point there, to cut to the chase. There is not enough monetary policy space to deal with the next downturn. Basically meaning, forget the notion of buying, creating reserves to buy assets from commercial banks. You're going to need to step it up, Federal Reserve. You need to do something else. And so what are they going to do? The current policy space for global central banks is limited and will not be enough to respond to a significant, let alone a dramatic downturn. Okay, so the old way of doing things isn't going to work. You need to do things differently. And what do they say? Look at the fourth bullet point down there. An unprecedented response is needed, says BlackRock. What is that response? Here you go. BlackRock says that response will likely involve going direct. Those are BlackRock's words. That's their plan. They're going to go direct now. What does going direct mean? Going direct means the central bank finding ways to get central bank money, meaning you got to find a way to get that blue line to have an influence on the retail bank money circuit. You have to find a way to get central bank money issued by the Federal Reserve directly into the hands of public and private sector spenders. And that is exactly what we are seeing in this graph right here. And again, I'm going to zoom into that graph and cut my head out of the way. And you can see the public money in blue being matched dollar for dollar in green. And I wrote the paper, The Going Direct Reset, for Catherine and for Soleri, and it explains how the Fed did that. But for present purposes, all you need to know is that is exactly BlackRock's plan. You just saw it in the BlackRock presentation from August of 2019. they say we need to find a way to get that public blue money into the, you know, into the green money circuit. And there you see it happening. Now, to put some context on this, that is BlackRock's in terms of time. BlackRock's going direct paper was presented on August 22nd of 2019, and they contemplate a next downturn. Notice that when BlackRock presents this plan, a few days later, maybe a couple weeks later, the Fed's that blue line has been declining for a while. It's been declining for about 18 months. Reserves have been declining. Suddenly, they start to tick up quite a bit. And the reason for that is that the crisis that BlackRock expressly contemplated began. And it started in the repo market on September 17th, 2019. The New York Fed comes in and begins adding money into the, begins adding reserves to the repo market. That continues for a few months. And that goes on until the pandemic hits in earnest and the Fed begins packing, really packing money onto its balance sheet. And then, you know, that's what is going on. But make no mistake about it, the Fed here is implementing BlackRock's plan almost to perfection. And so that is really that. And that is really why I say the pandemic is completely a monetary event. It is not really, I don't consider it a scientific event, a health event. It is a monetary event in the transition, ultimately, to get more and more central bank control. Like Carson's was talking about, we want to control all money. What you just saw here with the central bank going direct plan issued by BlackRock, that was an important step. It broke with 100 years of prior monetary history by the Fed and indeed by all central banks. And this is where we are. But the pandemic is a monetary event. And with that, that kind of concludes my presentation.